Thank you, Dean Kenny. After that, I'm not quite sure whether it's safe to make this speech. And in any case, if you came thinking you were going to hear a delicious and salacious discussion of prostitution in ancient and medieval and modern times, you'll have to ask Dean Kenny to make the speech. He knows much more about it than I do. It is true, however, that prostitutes had often a good deal of time on their hands in all the ages until the law took over, have spent some of their time in nursing the sick. But despite this rather dim connection, this is not my subject. I'm going to talk about the oldest of the unpaid women's professions, the nurturing of the human race, which is the direct ancestor of modern nursing. The word nurse entered the language, the English language, from the Latin, and comes from the Roman word nutrix, nurse. But so strong were the connotations of suckling that the plural of that word, nutrices, came to be used by the poets as the word for the breasts of the female. And this connotation has existed through the whole of our society. The word came into English with the Normans, and they conquered the British in 1066. And at that point, it meant a woman who is employed to suckle a child, and especially a child not her own. This gave rise to the term wet nurse, and as the meaning broadened, to the term dry nurse, and eventually broadened out to the nurturing, caring for, nourishing, minding, anything at all, lands, trees, nurseries, animals, goods, money, what have you, anything that could be enlarged and improved by being cherished. The verb to nurse did not appear until the 16th century, and then had much the same meanings and much the same kind of broadening into a very large sense of nursing, cherishing, fostering, tending, anything at all. It was not until the 18th century, when the education of nurses began, that the meaning of one who is trained to care for the sick appeared in the dictionaries, and it is only in the most recent American dictionaries that the first meaning is now one who is trained to care for the sick, especially in a hospital and under the direction of a physician. And the second meaning is she who suckles a child. This very interesting change in meaning gives you some idea of what I am going to say. And I bother to discuss it because the evolution of nursing has taken place over such a very long period of time. In fact, the whole history of the human race. It is therefore deeply engraved upon each individual's and the race unconscious. And it is very difficult for us to understand that while the old role of cherishing and nurturing persists and is the soul and the spirit of the new role, the new role is not instinctive or natural to either men or women, but requires long, careful education and training, and must be paid for as justly and as equitably as all the other good things we pay for in our society. The history of nursing is my favorite subject, and anybody can induce me to stop talking about anything else and talk about that at the drop of a hat. But I think it is more important tonight to talk to you about the new role of this oldest of all professions as it is developing in British Columbia today. One of the most interesting and attractive things about the University of British Columbia Health Center is the concept of a team of health professionals working together as colleagues, using each one's best abilities, not only for the prevention of illness, but also for the cure of the sick. Many people are here because they have been attracted by this idea, and I am one of these people. Everyone agrees that it is an inspired idea, and by everyone I mean the doctors and the nurses and the physio and occupational therapists and the nutritionists and the psychologists and the lay people. Our Board of Governors is fully and completely behind the idea. I came expecting to be incorporated into an active team of health professionals and was really quite surprised to find that no such team exists. In fact, it's very like the weather today. Everybody says something should be done about it, but nobody does anything. It is such a good idea that many other universities have borrowed it, and I recently spent some weeks wandering around these universities trying to see if they were doing any better with the concept than we are. Some of them have fancier buildings, but I don't see anybody any further along with this abstract notion. And so, since we say we should be a team, and since we agree we should be a team, why aren't we? I've given a great deal of time since I came here to thinking about the difficulties that lie in our way. I'm sure I haven't thought of them all, but I'd like to tell you about some of the ones that we've thought of in the School of Nursing and what we're trying to do about it. The commonly given and the commonly accepted reason that we can't be a team is the doctors won't cooperate, so the rest of us can't. Well, that may be fine as an excuse, but as a reason, it doesn't really hold water very well. But since it's usually given first, and usually you don't bother looking any further, let's look at the doctors first. From time immemorial, the doctors have been given by society a very special place. Special responsibilities, special authorities, and with these, honor, respect, and often also wealth. Moreover, the education of the doctor from primitive times has been designed to set him apart and above the peer group. The process of education is long, arduous, demanding. It gives him or her an esoteric knowledge from which he derives both power and prestige. All educational systems, of course, are designed with both an overt and a covert purpose. The overt purpose is to impart the knowledges, the skills, the culture, the beliefs of the race. But the covert purpose is to mold the child or the individual into a certain acceptable pattern of thought, belief, and behavior. As the anthropologists say, to work the individual into the mores of the tribe. In professional schools, this process is very strong and very important. The individual must not only have the knowledges and skills necessary for practicing medicine or nursing or social work or what have you, but must be able to act effectively in the role. This is accomplished through a process of conditioning at the subliminal level. It is caught. It is not taught. Therefore, once it is acquired, it is very difficult to lose. The modern practice of medicine requires years of education and training. The selection process is severe. Here we take 60 students out of probably 600. This makes them special before they ever start. The body of knowledge to be mastered is enormous. Just to look at the cumulative medical index makes your head ache. To think of reading it. The skills and techniques to be acquired are legion. The dangers and the difficulties, the hazards and the risks increase as the cures multiply, and as more and more people become educated and demand that they will be given these cures and this treatment. As a result, the need to deliberately build up a personality to withstand the onslaught of practice, to take large responsibilities, make difficult decisions, face anger and criticism, grief and death, requires a very strong superego, able to take a lot of stress without breaking. This is an essential process. The doctor must believe in himself, and the patient must believe in the doctor. Without these two factors, no useful interaction can take place. In contrast, all the other health professionals are less strong, less respected, less powerful, wealthy, and less inwardly secure and assured. In the psychologist's terms, their ego strength is much less than that of the medical men. If you look at just one or two of them briefly, the dentist is the next strongest one. He's an independent practitioner. He's paid a fee for service. But he is a splinter off from medicine. He uses some part of the body of medical knowledge. He strives at the moment to become a part of medical practice, and particularly of oral surgery. Pharmacy has only very recently recognized that its proper place is not to be a merchant on the street corner, filling prescriptions as a side effect of selling all kinds of odds and ends of goods. For nursing, this new realization of pharmacy, of its real place, is extremely important. For nursing, for the last 100 years, has been doing a great deal of the work that belongs in the hands of a pharmacist. Though we all recognize that we are what we eat, and that the science of nutrition is increasingly important, we relegate the dietitian to the kitchen and dismiss her as a mere cook. So on. One could go run through all the other professionals, not one of whom are recognized for the value of what they have to offer to society. Now coming to nursing, which is the one I know the most about, the training of nurses began just a little more than 100 years ago. By and large, it confined itself to the imparting of certain skills, techniques, and procedures, a smattering of medical knowledge, and the inculcation of obedience, submissiveness, passivity, patience, and even servility. My notice often didn't take, and we got some real battle axes of matrons who were responsible for the cleaning up of the hospitals in the late 19th and early 20th centuries and making them into the workshops of the doctors. But by and large, the women who did not submit left. Those who achieved a true status as an independent individual did it in spite of and not on account of their education. Of course, that's one of the most wonderful things about the educational systems that we create, that most of us recover and get educated anyway. Now we're asking these 9 or 10 diverse health professionals to form a team. The doctors are to give up their position of preeminence and join the other team members at their level. And the other team members are to become colleagues of the doctors and to rise to his level. Can this be done? How can this be done? Well, what is a team? Originally, of course, a team was a pair of draft animals, or 4 or 6, harnessed to pull together to draw a load. And they were supposed to draw evenly. A good team drew evenly. Commonly now it means a group of people who were engaged in playing a game or some kind of joint enterprise. Take a baseball game, for example, the one I know the best. You have nine people and some spares playing together. Each has an area of expertise. The pitcher can pitch, and the batter can bat, and the backstop can stop. And all the other eight don't rush out into the left field to catch a fly for the left fielder. They stay in their places and do their thing. And everyone can bat, and everyone can run. Everyone has to bat, and everyone has to run. And occasionally, people have to do the other people's job. Not only then are we asking the doctors to stop wanting to be the captain, but we're asking the other eight or nine or ten to give up seeking their own autonomy and their own identity and to merge themselves one into another. When for the last 50 or 60 years, they've all frantically trying to be independent and to find their own identity. Yet even as a baseball team, to be good, must have nine people all good at and experts in some aspects of the game, so a health team must have a group of people, each with a well-defined area of expertise. Each must be confident and able in his area and must know and appreciate each other one's contribution, so that nobody will be doing somebody else's work or trying to, or letting somebody else or expecting somebody else to do his. The doctor's assumed arrogance and air of superiority and command is to a great extent a reflection of, and I speak now for nursing only, our own lack of a clear identity, an assurance of expertise in nursing, and a confidence in our ability to carry it off. When we at the School of Nursing had arrived at this stage of thing, we began to ask ourselves questions like, what is nursing's area of expertise? What are we doing to help these students act in a collegial relationship with the doctors and with the other health professionals? A doctor can't be a colleague unless he has somebody to be a colleague with. What are we doing to make the nurses colleagues of the doctors? This brought us to looking at the typical nursing school curriculum. It runs something like this. The principal areas of study are divided on the medical model into medicine, surgery, obstetrics, gynecology, psychiatry, pediatrics, geriatrics, public health. Within these, there are innumerable subdivisions. The subject matter is the disease states, their pathology, etiology, signs and symptoms, method of diagnosis, prognosis, treatment, and the side effect of treatment. This is taught and learned for hundreds of diseases. After that, if there's any time left, something is taught about nursing care. So that the area that should be her expertise is in fact often scarcely touched upon. She has learned some watered down medicine, the how of many routines, procedures, and techniques, but not necessarily the why of any. And she has learned the values of promptness, obedience, and humility before her superiors. As I said before, this is not to say that no good nurses emerged from this system. Many did. Many excellent nurses survived the process and held us together. But few creative, innovative nurses can be bred in this manner. The springboard of creative action is theoretical knowledge. Leadership in nursing tends to spring not from theoretical knowledge, but from dictatorship. We then examined the University School of Nursing curriculum and realized that we had fallen into exactly the same trap. Though it was 5 years in length, and did teach more nursing than a three-year hospital program could possibly teach, for a variety of reasons, not very much nursing was taught. The first 2 years were given over almost entirely to the teaching of basic sciences by other people than nurses. We saw the students only briefly in the second year. There were many problems. One of the biggest problems was that the enrollment was very small. The largest number ever to enter was 60 students, and no one who was admissible to the university was ever turned away. Most university schools, after an initial period of fumbling about for a few years, are swamped with applicants. They will be doing the same thing as medical schools, taking 50 out of 500 or 80 out of 800 applicants. The University of British Columbia School of Nursing has been here since 1919. What is the matter? Now, this question we very seriously asked ourselves. This school should have been bursting at the seams by the end of the Second World War. Why not? We discussed the situation with students, with alumni, with staff, with all kinds of outsiders, and we got a great many insights. We gave the priority to the teaching of everything else but nursing. We began to teach nursing slightly, very slightly, in the second year. We crammed all the clinical nursing into the third year and the fourth year. The fifth year was given over to the teaching of community health, teaching in schools of nursing, and the administration of nursing services. Students who would like to have had a university education in nursing came and looked at the curriculum, shook their heads, and went away. Many of them to the United States, and many of them to hospital schools of nursing. Many of these, of course, turn up to take a three-year degree in nursing education, which we have been offering for a very long time, for graduate nurses. But that's another story that I'll come back to. We have had another large problem, and that is that we have had no control over any beds whatsoever in this community. That is, the quality of nursing care, which is to be shown to the students, cannot be determined by the University School of Nursing. There is no role model of the university nurse. There are, therefore, two results. One of them is you have such a small enrollment that, as Dean Finn would say, there is no critical mass to have an impact on the community. And you find that the nurses who do finally emerge from the university school, having looked at the rigid, hierarchical, authoritarian structure of our hospitals, go away, either into community health or into psychiatry, where intelligence, education, innovation, ingenuity are prized, valued, and paid for. The net result is the outward, though false, appearance of the inability and unwillingness of the university student graduate to nurse the patients. The fact, of course, is that the university graduate wants only to nurse the patients, not the hospital administrator, not the doctors, not the drugs, not the linen, not the desk, not the telephone, not the visitors, the patients. But since the hospital cannot be organized in such a way as to permit the nurses to nurse the patients, these nurses would prefer to go someplace where they can nurse the patients. There is also a widespread and mistaken notion that there's nothing to teach in nursing. There is no content. That if a nurse has a certain modicum of knowledge of the disease entities, she will somehow, by some womanly instinct, know how to nurse the patients. The parallel is drawn with the teaching of medical students, who learn vast quantities of science, and then, after years of such studies, are put into clerkships and internships and residencies, and learn how to apply that to the care of patients. Now it's quite true, the integration of knowledge takes place in the mind, not someplace else. And what the good medical student does is to slough off all the irrelevant stuff that he's been taught and draws upon the rest to help him to solve the patient problems. And in a 7 or 8 or 9 year curriculum, there is time for this process of assimilation and integration to take place. Society, however, cannot afford a 7 or 8 or 9 year curriculum for nursing. Summed up by the nursing students, who were loud in their complaints when I arrived here, the major problem of the curriculum is that it's too long and it's too irrelevant. As one of the more vocal students said to me, I don't want to know the formula for gasoline. I don't know the formula for gasoline. My only problem about gasoline is to have enough money to fill the tank. How to be more relevant? Well, we decided what we were going to do, even if it was an awful risk, is to teach nursing first. It is a school of nursing. This is going to be our primary effort, and the major time blocks are going to be given to that. The biological and behavioral sciences, which are the essential base of nursing, will be taught concurrently with nursing. So the students will be put in the way of rapidly integrating the needed concepts from the sciences into their nursing knowledge. The major problem in the teaching of nursing is that there is no unifying principle around which to create a discrete and organized body of knowledge. So we decided to devise one. It took us almost a year of work, because we had to do it in our spare time, to devise a model, a conceptual framework on which to base a curriculum. We made a behavioral systems model, which pointed up 9 nursing problems. Now, I'd like to digress for just a minute, if I may, because I find that many people turn off at this point, and that even Dean Kenny misunderstands, and think that a behavioral model means a psychological model, ignoring the presence of physical man and his needs. Though the word behavior is usually thought of in terms of conduct or manners, actually it comes from be and have. And everything behaves in a certain way. We are thinking as much of cellular and organic behavior as we are of temper or tears. We regard disease not as a mysterious parasitic entity like mistletoe on an oak or a toadstool in the lawn, but as life in altered form. As such, it occasions some changes in the patient's behavior. His temperature goes up or down, his heart rate slows or quickens, he vomits, he has diarrhea, he is depressed or angry, he weeps or he relapses into silence. It is the doctor's problem and task to find the cause of these aberrant behaviors and to prescribe a cure. It is the nurse's delegated task to help him with the treatment process, but it is her unique task to deal with the behaviors he manifests, be they physiological or psychological. I realize that a number of things have lent support to the theory that we have gone psychological and are not preparing hospital nurses to care for acutely ill people. The first of these is our shortening of the physical science component. Actually, what we have done here is become selective, creating a meaningful and interesting sequence of physiology, microbiology, and pathology. The second is that we are beginning the program with the study of the well person, normal growth and development. It is not so well known that there will be a 12-week block of clinical study and practice, May to July, in each of the first 2 years. It is in these 20-odd weeks that we hope to really get our hands on these students without interruption to teach nursing and to inspire confidence. The third thing giving credence to the notion of a psychology curriculum is that I am a psychologist and not a nurse. This is true, but two other things sorry, should also be known. I've done nothing since 1947 but work with nurses, teach and consult in schools of nursing. And if I may be so bold as to add a pertinent but personal fact, I have been often at great length ill in my life, and there is no better teacher of the importance of anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, microbiology, pathology, biochemistry, than long periods of pain, a couple of bad allergic reactions to drugs, and a few near brushes with death. I am personally committed to seeing that the necessary knowledge base is acquired, but that it is acquired meaningfully and relevantly, so that it is loved as knowledge, used effectively, and pursued as a lifetime endeavor. Returning now to our model, our objective was to define the unique role of nursing, not the delegated medical tasks, which everyone understands and which we accept as given. We finally, as I said, after over a year of effort, defined 9 nursing problems. These are pain, disturbances in structural integrity, disturbances in functional integrity, disturbances in mobility, in cognition, in body image, in self-concept, in role performance, and in interpersonal relations. Pain is, of course, a part of each of the other 8 problems, but pain is so prevalent a problem, and nursing can do so much to relieve pain without medical intervention, that we decided to use it as a special problem area. 2 things are important to note. One is that these are not necessarily the right problems or the only problems, but they are the chosen problems. It is a way of looking at nursing. It is logical. If the problems that we find in the field are not the problems we have named, obviously the problems in the field are right, and the problems we have named are wrong. And we must change the model, and we must change the list of problems. The value of the model and the derived problems is not in any assurance of perfection, but in its inner logic, which will inevitably show us its defects. It is a systematic way of studying nursing. The second point is that these 9 nursing problems cut across the fields of medical practice. Pain can be found as an accompaniment of diseases or injuries in medical, surgical, obstetrical, so on fields. Disturbances in mobility can arise from such diverse problems as losing a leg, sinking into an acute depression, disturbances in self-concept from having, for example, a heart attack or losing your job. If you think of the big business tycoon who sits behind a large desk in a large office barking orders at a whole staff of people, who suddenly collapses with an enormous heart attack and finds himself in a very short white nightgown in a hospital bed with a little nurse telling him, no, you cannot have a cigar, and no, you cannot have any whiskey, and no, you cannot have any beefsteak, you realize that his whole self-concept has disappeared, and he has to learn a whole new one if he is going to survive. More than his heart is going to have a lot of attention. And all these problems can occur at any age level and in people both ostensibly well and ostensibly sick. The students, and may I say the staff, are therefore going to learn to look at people sick and well in 2 ways. The medical way: what is the pathology present, if any? What is the diagnosis, treatment, so on? And what are the resulting nursing problems? The model defines nursing as the nurturing of man during critical periods of his life cycle, so that he may develop and use a range of coping behaviors which permit him to satisfy his basic human needs and thereby move toward optimal health. The curriculum begins with the study of normal growth and development, with emphasis on the maturational, physical, and psychological problems of the well person. It proceeds to study the demands made upon the person by the stresses of the maturational stages, and the nursing care required when these demands cannot be met by the individual himself. Studies are made of the losses which each individual experiences in his life cycle. Such losses as accidental or surgical loss of a limb or loss of a mother are considered, but as I've already said, also less obvious losses like losses of role, losses of self-image. The curriculum develops to consider not only individuals but families and the communities, and the students will emerge ready for nursing in any hospital or community field of nursing, and able to embrace that modern fancy term, the nurse practitioner. The master's program is also based on the model and deals in depth with clinical nursing problems of the developmental years, the adult years, and the declining years in hospital and community. It aims to produce the clinical nurse specialists needed for the hospitals, and also teachers, consultants, and research workers. The development of the new problem-oriented patient record, which hopefully will be instituted in the new British Columbia Medical Center, will be a perfect opportunity to utilize the 9 nursing problems as the basis of the nurse's notes. The data for research into nursing care would then be readily available from the computer. We are trying to arrange for the students to write their registered nurse examinations at the end of the second year summer clinical session. They will have covered all the work required for this examination by that time. This will permit those who haven't enough money to go on for 4 years to stop and work, or permit others to work part-time while they complete their degrees. And hopefully this will to some extent alleviate the awful shortage of nurses in our hospitals. This, of course, is dependent on our receiving approval from the Committee on the Approval of Schools of Nursing. We have tentative approval now, and complete approval, I regret to tell you, is dependent not upon our curriculum, which has been approved, but upon our being able to shore up our staff and our budget. The committee simply does not believe that any school could live and grow with the number of people and the amount of money we now have. We also intend to admit graduates of hospital schools and 2-year diploma schools to the third year of the new program after 1975. The old 3-year program for graduate nurses will be discontinued then. Somehow, and I take the blame for this, the idea has gone abroad that any graduate of any school with any background will be admitted to the third year. This, of course, is not so. There will be examinations in both theory and clinical practice, and makeup courses for all who do not meet our standards of theoretical knowledge and of quality nursing care. We hope that the numbers who drop out at the end of the second year and the numbers who enter the third year will be roughly equal. It may be that in time, when the community college schools are built up in both size and standard, UBC will be able to drop the first 2 years and concentrate entirely upon senior nursing and graduate nursing education. However, there's no rearrangement of subject matter that would produce a nurse who has not only the knowledge, the skill, and the ability, but also the personality characteristics of confidence and creativity, which will enable her to act in the collegial relationship with the other health professions, and particularly with the medical profession. We are trying a variety of experiments with methods in the belief that, to some extent at least, process is content. The first of these is that all the teaching is being done by teams. The new first year has a team of 8 full-time instructors and a flexible number of part-time instructors. These represent 8 different nursing specializations, including psychiatry and public health. We want the students to understand from the very beginning that all human beings and their problems are multifaceted and require a multifaceted approach, that there must be a team in nursing as well as an interprofessional team. The second innovation is that we are increasing our means of offering the students opportunities for independent study. We've always tried to do this, but we've been very much inhibited by lack of either the hardware or the software necessary. However, the new Instructional Resources Center, as you probably know, is magnificently equipped with the hardware. And Woodward and Vancouver Foundations have both given us money with which we have been able to buy study carrels and independent study packages and raw materials for making other materials of our own. We are expecting the students to use these materials as they would use books and holding them responsible for learning themselves. Areas of knowledge previously taught by lecture because there was no other means, they will now be expected to learn, and the staff will be responsible only to see that they have been learned. By these and many other techniques, we are hoping to foster an independence of thought and action as well as of study. As you all know, there's a very grave shortage of nurses in British Columbia. I've mentioned some of the ways in which I hope this new program will do something about that. For one thing, the new program and the attendant publicity has raised our entrance from 60 to something like 155 first-year students. And these have been accepted from a very large number of applicants, the first time in our history when we have actually turned people away. I do expect an attrition rate in this very new program, and I should be very happy if we settle into 140 to 150 first-year students. The second and more unexpected phenomenon was the very sharp rise in the number of diploma nurses entering to take degrees. Though we're strained at every seam, we didn't turn away any of these. I'm not sure exactly how many there are, but something up towards 200, when there have previously been something between 30 and 50, in various stages of development. Some are brand new students beginning. Most of them are some way along their way. We're also giving courses at many of the college, the community colleges throughout the province, so that other students are being able to start their program at this point. However, one more rather important thing before I stop, and that is that the bottleneck in the preparation of nurses in British Columbia is not at the two-year level. It is at the master's level. It is impossible to open more community college schools in other areas because there is a desperate shortage of teachers. In fact, the whole leadership echelon is practically non-existent. This is because the master's program at UBC started only about 4 years ago and attracted a very small number of students. We graduated six in June of 1973. Here, too, we're trying many new and innovative measures to increase the supply. First, we've articulated the degree with the baccalaureate degree and organized it on broad fields of knowledge on the basis of the maturational stages of life and the demands and losses of those stages in such a manner as to permit each student to choose an individualized program in hospital or community nursing. We reduced the unit value from 30 to 24 units. It was taking many nurses 3 years to complete 30 units, which is much too long for a master's degree. Even 24 units, in my opinion, is too long for a master's degree, but as long as this remains the terminal degree in nursing in this province, we feel it best to leave it. We are offering two beginning courses in the evenings, between 7 and 9 on two evenings, and we plan to add the subjects 2 by 2 until the whole program is offered in the evenings. The response to this move has been absolutely overwhelming. I guess we would get 10 students. We got 31. The problem is it's putting an enormous strain on our staff. The same people are teaching in the evening as are teaching in the daytime. But it will, in a year or two, help to release the bottleneck in nursing. But if any one thing could help us, it would be the building up of this program, both by subsidizing the program and subsidizing the students undertaking the work. Far too many of them are working and studying at the same time. This Murphy drip method of education is very slow indeed, and the need for the graduates is urgent, and it is now. Well, of course, the proof of the pudding, this one like all others, is in the eating, and the first few bites have been excellent. The university, though desperately poor and claiming to have no money, shook out its coffers for us and enabled us to take in this large number of students, found us space. The foundations, as I have been said, gave us money. We've had magnificent support from the faculties of arts and science. And most of all, I must pay tribute to my staff who have worked days, nights, and weekends to create this program and who are still continuing to do so in order to make it a reality. And to the students who have given us continuous, imaginative, creative input into our ideas and plans. We need a school building and we need equipment. But sticks and stones are not schools. People are schools, the teachers and the scholars. And with these, we are magnificently endowed. I realize that we may be on the wrong track. I realize we are taking an awful risk by letting ourselves out on this limb. And as Machiavelli said long since, there is nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its process, in its success, than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Hugh Pritchard has agreed to answer any questions you may have. And I guess I should say, if you don't have an opportunity to ask the question you would like to ask, I gather she will be on an open line program tomorrow between 9 and 10. And I hate to mention the station, but I will, CJOR. Are there questions? Yes.
Dr. Pritchard, do you see this as a feminine pursuit exclusively, or are you looking forward to male nurses taking up part of this role? There seems to be an endless number of students wanting to get into medicine and dentistry and veterinary science, and not making it. Could some of these be diverted into nursing?
We have an increasing number of male applicants, and if they're eligible, we take them all. We're delighted to have them. Male nurses are very badly needed, particularly in the areas of psychiatry and pediatrics.
Yes, Dr. Wolf.
Dr. Hugh Pritchard, you speak about this as though it is a new experiment. To what extent is the program that you have here similar to that of other schools of nursing in North America?
Well, it's not similar to any school of nursing in Canada, but many of the American schools have devised different kinds of conceptual frameworks, developmental models or behavioral models or systems models of some kind on which to base their curriculum, for exactly the same reason that we're looking for a systematic way of thinking about nursing and asking the questions about nursing and doing research into nursing. And one of the things which our staff wanted very badly was to be in communication with these most forward-looking schools.
If it's a nurse doctor at UBC and you want to work in intensive care, how many years would you have to stay?
Well, intensive care is not something that one can deal with in a sentence. All the intensive care nurses, in my opinion, should be at least baccalaureate graduates. And the nurses in charge of intensive care should be clinical nurse specialists in the area of intensive care in which they are working. That is, if it's a cardiovascular unit, they should be cardiovascular specialists.
So 4 years?
That's six. The master's degree takes 6 years from high school. We're a long way from that, I can tell you.
Yes.
Is there communication, in a cooperative measure between the
school here and the hospital school, the hospital educational programs for still our training nurses?
Yeah. Yes. How shall I explain this? There's a very close and warm working relationship amongst the schools of nursing in British Columbia. This is really one of the very remarkable things about this province. And we are consultants. Somebody on my staff is a consultant to practically every school of nursing in this province. The tendency at the moment is to close the hospital schools of nursing and to open two-year community college schools of nursing. The community colleges are wanting to have the master's degree as the minimum teaching requirement across the board. The shortage of nurses with the master's degree is greatly inhibiting this development.
Yes, are there further questions?
How hostile are the doctors to this program?
Ask the doctors. You can't talk about doctors in one sentence either, because doctors are very much individualists, and some doctors are my best friends and allies and supporters, and some doctors could cheerfully murder me.
Yeah.
Dr. Bernard, you mentioned your school being in contact with several other schools in the province. I'm totally ignorant as to what is the number of schools, number of students involved, and what fraction of them are your students at the university?
Oh, well, I'm not really very good on the statistics of nursing in British Columbia. There are, I think, about 2,500 undergraduate nursing students altogether in the whole province. There are, I believe, but don't quote me, 6 hospital schools, and there are 3 community college schools. But the community colleges are all wanting to open schools, and the Department of Health and the Department of Education are urging them all to open schools. And they phone me up and say, could I have 6 teachers, please? If I had 6 teachers, I'd keep them.
Yeah.
Fees are the regular university fees, and there is no reimbursement for clinical experience in hospitals.
Should the latter change on a student nurse being reimbursed like an intern?
Is the intern reimbursed, poor thing?
Well, I don't know. You seem to read in the newspapers, he is to a degree.
Well,
yes.
Is there anything incorporated in your program of instruction having to do with furthering the idea of teamwork? For example, in your nursing program, are the nurses being given anything about the way in which they can seek to further cooperation between and among the various parties to the team concept?
Well, that's really what it's all about. That they're being taught by a team, they're having their clinical experiences with a team, and hopefully this will increase as time goes on. That the problem of creating the interprofessional team is partly a straight problem of the computer and the timetables. If you could get them all into the clinical field at the same moment, that's
where the real interaction takes place. It doesn't take place in classrooms. But once you get them round a patient, it becomes quite simple and easy to create a team. Patient problem creates the team.
Yes, Dr. Burton.
Have you put in the number of your teaching beds yet, or prospect of teaching beds? You mentioned that in your speech, desirable.
Well, hopefully the new British Columbia Medical Center is being created with the idea of providing teaching beds and suitable teaching facilities, not only for nursing, but for all health professionals. That's the idea behind it. I'm hopeful.
Are you including, as you mentioned, nurses in other countries, Australia, India, etc.?
We have our closest connection actually with nurses from New Zealand, Australia, and Taiwan and the mainland of China, who seem to drift across the Pacific Ocean in this direction. New Zealand in particular is trying very hard at the moment to create a university school of nursing. They have just appointed the first professor, who was recently here with us for some time. And we have now agreed to take two of their students into our master's program in order to help them acquire some staff to get this university school going. Everybody's welcome.
Now I'd like to call upon Dr. Sudfeld to thank the speaker. Dr. Sudfeld.
You can see it's an all psychologist evening. I was fascinated by the way in which Dr. U. Pritchard not only mastered one profession after another, but also managed to integrate all of them in the speech tonight. You can see the teacher in her meticulous care for the real meaning of words and how the meaning could be used to illuminate the problems today. You can see the psychologist in her understanding of the social roles which the various health professionals play and how they get that way. You can see the nursing educator by, I think, not only understanding, but a deep emotional feeling for the values of nursing and what it can accomplish. And I think last but not least, you can see the academic administrator in the inadequacy of the budget and the careful study of Machiavelli.
I don't know whether a thought theme can really be brought into reality, but if it ever is, I think it's the combination of realism and idealism and grace and toughness which Dr. Richard has demonstrated not only tonight, but ever since she's been here, that's going to enable it to come into being. And if it does, I think in due course, the Vancouver Institute and all of us can thank Dr. Richard not only for the talk tonight, but also for the improvement of the health system on which we all depend. Thank you.
Just one final reminder, remember that the next three lectures will be held over in the Instructional Resources Center. Thank you.